Good evening and welcome to the August 14th, 2007 regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed status of negotiations with the California School Employees Association, confidential employees, the Management Educators Council, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and the Service Employees International Union. No votes were taken and no decisions were made. It was discussion only. We'd like to go with a consensus on the order of business. And actually, I would like to ask that we modify the agenda. The action discussion item number 4, AB 602, funding for special education. I will not participate in that discussion. And I would ask that we place that after number 19 so that I can leave the meeting. It may have discussions that relate to the County Office of Education, and I would not want anyone to assume that there's a conflict of interest. So I will be leaving after that. So I would ask the board's indulgence and request that we move item number 4 after item number 19. Can I get some agreement on that?
Well, I only have one thing to say. I hurt my back Friday, and what if I can't make it through the meeting? That means I'd have to leave early, too, and miss that part.
But yeah, I can't be involved in that discussion. Mr. Millar?
Well, I appreciate your sensitivity to potential conflicts, but I guess I'd like to get a little more clarification. I think you're kind of a valuable board member to lose to this discussion when we're not at the stage of making determinations about compensation or those kinds of things. And I'm not criticizing your decision. I'm just wondering if maybe we could get some insight from our counsel to let us know whether it's necessary, because I mean maybe tonight you have to do what you have to do, but I think you're important to this discussion.
I appreciate that, and you know, I'd like to think so too, and in fact we did discuss it with counsel today. And and Dr. Valentine and I discussed that this afternoon, and Dr. Valentine had a discussion with counsel, and we agreed that it, because of the nature of the discussion and the potential for this coming before the board, that it would not be a good idea for me to engage in either the discussion of this item or certainly not the vote of any of an item relating to this. And so that's why I'm going to need to leave when this item is discussed. Okay. So thank you. And again, is there a consensus that we can move that to the end? And recognizing, too, that Mrs. Dickinson is feeling a little under the weather today, and so we hope that she'll be able to make it for the meeting. We'll try to make it quick. Let's move on then to our action, which is the approval of our minutes. Do we have a motion or motions to approve the minutes for June 19th, June 26th, July 5th, and July 17th?
I think the motion should be made by someone who was at all four meetings, because there were several who missed a few meetings. So not to get into that headache, we could maybe have someone who was
maybe
there.
Maybe we should go ahead and then do each one, each item individually is what I'm thinking. You want to go ahead and move it, Mrs.?
I believe I was present at all meetings. So I'll move approval of the minutes of the meetings of June 19th, 2007, June 26th, 2007, July 5th, 2007, and July 17th, 2007, as presented.
Okay. And again, some of us were absent for some of these meetings. And Kim, is that okay for us to vote on a block on these, whether we were at? Okay. Do we have a second for that motion?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye. I'm sorry.
No, wait. I'm sorry. I apologize. Is there discussion?
Thank you.
I'm a little rusty tonight.
There was a reason the light was on. On the minutes of June 19th, on item 18 on the advanced agenda items, if the board would indulge me, while one of the things that I would like to discuss on the suspension and expulsions is the timing of the events and as they occur, I'd also like to note that this is not the only reason, and it has, I think, my request for to be an advanced agenda item is not just based on this item alone.
Are you asking for a modification in the language to the minutes as noted, sir?
Yes.
Would you like to make a recommendation on how you'd like to see that?
Yes. Thank you. I'd like to recommend that it be noted that I asked for an advanced agenda item to discuss the suspension and expulsions how we arrive at them and how we follow through on them.
Specifically, is Kim? What do you think?
I interpret that to mean that we're deleting the remainder of that sentence, so agendized to discuss the phrase that you just said and delete the rest of that sentence.
As always, you're wonderful. Thank you.
If I may, I just want to make sure that we don't lose the component in there where we wanted to look at the overall process, explore new outcomes and follow-up mechanisms, too. So maybe just some language regarding a broad review of expulsions and disciplinary hearings and alternative outcomes. But I'm happy with Mr. Buckman's language. I just hope I don't want the board to lose that. Idea either.
Oh, I had meant the rest of the paragraph would stay, just the last part of that sentence.
All right, so we have a second. Mrs. Roger, will you accept the amendment to the minutes?
I will.
Okay. Then let's go ahead and vote on that. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It carries 7-0. Let's move on then to our presentations. And our first presentation is introduction of new administrative appointees. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. I'm pleased to welcome three new members to the district management team. And first I'd like to welcome Dan Block, who comes to us from the Lucia Marr School District, where most recently he served with distinction as the principal of Grover Heights Elementary School. Dan has many connections to San Luis Coastal. The greatest among those is that his wife Terry teaches at Los Ranchos Elementary School, where his four children also attend. The Block family has friends and colleagues throughout our district, and literally everybody I have spoken to about Dan coming to San Luis Coastal has responded with elation, if they were from our district, and told us what a wonderful find this is. So if you could please join me in welcoming Dan Block, principal of Bishop's Peak Teach. Thank you, Dan. One of the great pleasures in this business is to see the careers of friends and colleagues blossom within our own organization. I'm so pleased to introduce Janet Gould as the new principal of Del Mar Elementary School. Janet's connection to San Luis Coastal goes back a long ways. Janet attended elementary school, middle school, and high school in our district. She has taught at Del Mar and now moves into the role of principal of Del Mar Elementary School. We're so pleased to share this beginning of a new chapter on your career. Please welcome Janet Gould to San Luis Coastal. And finally, I'm pleased to preside over a reunion of sorts. Rita Delkiskamp began her administrative career in San Luis Coastal as a dean at San Luis Obispo High School. She had talents which were evident to everyone, including the Santa Maria High School District, who scooped up Rita and promoted her to an assistant principal in their district, and then later promoted her to director of migrant and bilingual programs in Santa Maria. Rita's maintained close ties to San Luis Coastal. Her husband, Dave, is an exceptional physical education teacher in our district. Their three children attend Pacheco, one child, and San Luis Obispo High School, two children. we're just so pleased to be able to reunite the family under one roof, our roof, by bringing Rita back as the new Director of Instructional Services. Please welcome Rita Dalkus-Camp. Great new class.
Great, and congratulations, and welcome to the administration of our school district. We're really happy that you're here. We strive to have the best people work for our school district and work for our children, and we know that you'll continue that legacy. Let's move on then to recognition of San Luis High School achievements. Will Jones, Karen Lopez, and Bonnie Parsons.
Good evening. Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School, and I think it's only appropriate as we make this presentation to Jeff that this magnificent trophy is on stage as we recognize him. It kind of looks like the trophy that Tiger won at the PGA on Sunday, the Wanamaker Trophy. We have been, for several weeks, our buttons have been popping with pride over the accomplishments of Daniel Lemkuhl and Austin Castro at the Ford AAA troubleshooting contest in Detroit, and then also of Daniel's wonderful success at the Skills USA contest in Kansas City. It just gives us great pride as a school and as a district and even as a state to have our students go off and be so successful in these in this area of automotives. But we all know that the excellence of our students is preceded and supported through by the excellence of our teachers. And so it's an honor for me to be able to recognize Jeff Lemkuhl, who received the Teacher of the Year Award from the Skills USA folks for the work that he did, also for the Ford AAA Troubleshooting National Contest for being the coach of that team. And so, Jeff, if you'll come up, I think it's only appropriate. Tiger had to hold his trophy while people spoke, so you get to do the same thing. And, you know, when we saw this trophy, Jeff said, well, you know, Will, it's not a big deal. They give this to every winning coach. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, come on. You know, and I, you know, somehow I don't think that diminishes the significance of the award. This is a national championship that Jeff and his students have won. But I think what's more important to say about Jeff as a teacher and as a human being is that the effort that he put into helping his students to accomplish this amazing achievement that they have accomplished is the same effort that he puts into every single thing that he does at our school every day of the school year. Before school, during school, after school, in the summer, at night, whether it's working with students to be successful in automotives or in other industrial technology areas, working with his colleagues to put together grants so we can, in the applied arts program, so we can benefit from the generosity of the state when that comes around. Everything that Jeff does, he just does with such excellence and with such total commitment that it's easy for me to say that there is no more successful, no more professional, and no more admired teacher at our school than Jeff Lemkuhl. So congratulations, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. It's been a whirlwind summer from Detroit into Kansas City and Nebraska and all over the place, so it's really exciting. I did want to highlight one thing about Daniel and Austin. We're going to do skills first, right? The World Powerhouse or UCLA, depending on your affiliation. Sorry, Cornhuskers, I can't help you there. But anyways, we were second to them, which is huge, and then there was the closest team, third place, was way, way down below. So it was really exciting. But thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Thank you for the support. All the way to both contests, we represented the state very, very well, and the boys did a great job and acted like real gentlemen, so it was pretty neat. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Karen Lopez. I'm the Regional Occupational Program District Coordinator, and it is my pleasure to be here to introduce one of the outstanding students that you've already heard just a little bit about. Before I do that, I would like to recognize and introduce to you Jim Souza, who's the superintendent for the Santa Lucia Consortia, which we are a part of, and also, sure. And also Val Harrigan, who's the secretary for our district, for the ROP. SkillsUSA is a national organization serving teachers in high school and college students who are preparing for careers in technical, skilled, and service occupations, including health occupations. Their motto is preparing for leadership in the world of work. In June, this last June of 2007, SkillsUSA held their 43rd annual National Leadership and Skills Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. Attending there were over 5,000 competitors. 117 of those were from California. Of those competitors from California, they brought home 9 gold, 6 silver, 5 bronze medals for a total of 20 medals in 15 categories. San Luis Coastal Unified School District had 4 of those students there at the conference and in the competition, and we would like to thank you, the board, and the district for your support, because without that, we wouldn't be able to get these students to these national competitions. And it is my pleasure tonight and privilege to introduce to you Daniel Lemkuhl. Come on up, Daniel. I'll make you stand up here. I was going to add something, but that's okay.
Well, first I'd like to say thank you very much for all your support, and we couldn't have done it without on our own. So, and to Mrs. Harrigan and everyone else who had a part in making it happen, really appreciate it. The competition was about 9 hours long, all in one day. And what they have is they have 15 hands-on stations with different tasks based off a different area of the automobile. And the goal is to put the newest technology and kind of get us using that. And so it was very long, but it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of challenging. Some areas were challenging. Some were felt a little easier. But overall, it was a really good experience. So, thank you very much.
Jeff brought the high-tech version of the slides. I was going to pass these around, but we'll look at the board so everybody can see them. Do you want to explain what they are? Do you want
sure.
me to go ahead?
No, that's fine. Just to say something about SkillsUSA. SkillsUSA, just so you know, is the equivalent of what FFA is to agriculture. SkillsUSA is to vocational technical areas and so on. And Daniel was telling about the contest. Similar to Ford AAA, in each contest in automotive service technology, there's one student from each state in the nation. So there was 50 kids. And Ford sponsors a station, Toyota sponsors a station, and Chrysler sponsors a station. A lot of representation. And just so you know the scope of it, Daniel won from that contest $7,000 for first place to his school of choice, in addition to a couple of full automotive technical college scholarships worth each about $30,000. He's going to the University of Nebraska, so he won't be using those, but he got $7,000. Snap-on toolbox, Matco toolbox, tools, Panasonic Toughbook, which is a military spec laptop from Toyota, on and on and on. So there was a lot of prizes and a lot of really neat things. Here's some just 3 pictures of the SkillsUSA contest. On the left there's Spencer Van Hoos from San Luis Obispo High School, who took a bronze in computer programming. The next 4 individuals going from left to right are the Cuesta College Teamworks team that took a gold in Teamworks, which is a construction kind of contest. They have to do masonry and some other of 3 pictures here, I think. See if I got it right. Oh, they didn't want to show that one. There's Daniel and I right out. This is at Kemper Arena in Kansas City. It was quite an event. And then there's Daniel and Art Leach and the others there. What you may not know or recall, but our first last year was the first time that we ever made it to the Nationals, and Eric Tracy placed seventh in automotive service technology. So as far as a program, it's pretty encouraging to see us building and, you know, kind of getting up there and out there. There you go. Thank you very much.
It's good that Daniel looks good in red.
Yes. Yes, he's leaving tomorrow, too.
Good evening. I am honored. Actually, my name is Bonnie Parsons. I'm the assistant principal at San Luis High School, and I've had the pleasure of working with the students in the automotive program and Jeff Lemkuhl for, nearly 20 years? Yeah, a long time. So I'm honored to present the national champions of the Ford AAA competition, Austin Castro. So Austin, if you'll join me up here, and Daniel Lemkuhl. To earn this distinction, Austin and Daniel competed against schools throughout the United States. Their championship was determined by their written score and the time it took them to perfectly troubleshoot and repair a Ford vehicle. They scored 174 points out of 200 possible on the written exam. The highest score was 184. The third highest score was 184. The third highest score was 149. So there's a huge gap in what these gentlemen achieved over the third-rate school. Not third-rate, but the third-place school. For each question missed, and this is really important, as it came down to the final scoring and determination of who would win, this written score would determine who won. And as I understand it, they were calculating madly how many points they received against those they lost. So for each question missed, the team was penalized 18 seconds towards their final time, which determined the ultimate championship. They closed their hood, signifying that they had completed the hands-on exam, in 41 minutes, 18 seconds. They took their time, they troubleshooted carefully, and they ensured that all was well, all was done, and it was done correctly. $100, Snap-on tools, a toolbox with tools and additional items. Fortunately, I've had the opportunity to observe this competition as well as the USA Skills competition firsthand. Both are incredibly exciting and tense. From my perspective, I can only share with you, in watching the coach and the father pacing up and down, and fortunately for me and for everyone who else surrounded him, we were receiving commentaries, blow by blow, reports as to what they were doing. Oh, gosh, they missed that. Oh, they got that. This is good. They're on the right track. However, what I remember most about the competitions are the two team members, Austin and Daniel, and others before them, working together, logically working through problems, applying their knowledge, and exhibiting a demeanor of poise and respect. Ladies and gentlemen, our national champions, Austin Castro and Daniel Lemkuhl. A little bit. There's one more item, and it's the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that up until the second competition, the banquet for Skills USA, Daniel Lemkuhl didn't have a license. I didn't know this until after the banquet as we were getting into the car, and he said, now I can get my license. So that's the rest of the story. Here are two incredible young men, and who have given up their time and all that they have to reach a goal, their dream. And it's just a magnificent experience, and I'm very proud to have been a part of it. Thank you. We also have a short video clip of this win.
If I can just go a couple more minutes. Chrysler is giving us we have a 2006 convertible Sebring coming to San Luis High School for educational purposes. And last week, a truck showed up and had two brand new 2007 Ford Fusion engines got delivered to the high school, brand new, really, really, really neat, for, and all for educational purposes, and they'll be at the down here at the auto shop just below you. This contest, one team, one two-student team from each state in the nation. Daniel and Austin fixed the car in 41 minutes, just so you have an idea. It was really, really neat. This is the contest put together, a video clip. I'm only going to play the last minute and a half. It gives you a little feel of the contest, and then I've got just a couple of pictures just so you can see what it's like. Here we go. Show you just one or two other things here. It's actually during the contest. That's Daniel and Austin right in front of you. And then just one final clip. This is in front of World Headquarters in Dearborn, Michigan. Ford World Headquarters.
The best team, the best of the best, the top team from the 50 team.
I promise, last comment. After the contest, some representatives from Ford Motor Company, unbeknownst to us, set up a meeting with Alan Mulally, who's the president and CEO of Ford Motor Corporation. And we were reminded as we were riding up to the 12th floor of this building that he is the president of the 7th largest company in the world. So we got a photo shoot with him, a very down-to-earth gentleman, and we had a great time meeting him. So, and the boys all got personal photographs with him, so it was great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's very, very exciting, and it's just bringing tears to my eyes, that's for sure. Next we have...
Mr. President?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Just a thought. Well, we have a cake to just kind of celebrate the event, and it's certainly the board's pleasure. At what point you would like to,
well, if,
to
if
go in with that?
Now is the appropriate time, then why don't we have a recess, and we'll have some cake and celebrate the accomplishments of these guys. What's the board's pleasure?
That's the question.
What's the concern?
The concern is that we have a lot of people here that are from the Tiny Tiger Legacy Project as well. Okay, let's go ahead and then we'll do the Tiny Tiger Legacy Project and then we'll break for the cake and the congratulations.
Stick around, everybody.
Yeah, lots of cake, and Val made it, I understand, and it's great, and so...
How do you follow that? My name is Roger Fredrickson. I'm here on behalf of the Class 16 Leadership San Luis Obispo. It's affiliated with the Chamber of Commerce, and there are 35 of us, and we have to do a legacy project, and I don't know if the board's familiar with what we propose, but we'd like to do a facelift to the Tiny Tigers school. And so I want to present the idea to the board and give you an indication of what we have proposed, and if there's any questions or any thoughts, we would appreciate that. Can I go to the board and just point it out to you? Yeah. All right, we're going to give idea to the board. And then number two is the entry gate. Right now there's a wooden door. It's very unattractive, uninviting to little kids. And so we want to redo that. Again, we're looking at materials for that. Probably have some decorative art on that, maybe a tiny tiger, in fact, on it. So that's the proposal with the door. And then number three is the east-facing large wall. Currently, that wall is it's just a cinder block. It's not very attractive at all. Again, uninviting. And there are two trash dumpsters in front of it. So the entrance, as you go in, has two dumpsters and this uninviting wall. Again, we're looking at either decorative art or landscaping, depending on what's most appropriate. We're investigating that right now. And then number four is the dumpsters. There's a dumpster pad currently in front of the wall. Jessica's pointing at it right now. It's very unattractive. You look right at the dumpsters. We'd like to move that. We have two proposed locations that we're investigating right now. One is directly to the south, and that's that location right there. And then the other location's across, and there's just a little area there that may require excavation. Again, we're looking into that to see what is the most appropriate and what can be done. And that's we're looking into that with the Public Works program. And then number five is... Oh, yeah, the shed. There's a storage shed there in the interior area. We'd like to relocate that and actually put a brand new shed in. I think the shed's like 20 years old. It's rusted and falling apart. And it's right in the middle of the kids' play area. So we're proposing to move that actually to an open area, and Jessica's pointing to it, that is out of the way and the kids can still use the play area and have their bike path. And then the final item is the sandbox. The current sandbox is exposed. There's no cover, nothing to prevent the cat's use of it, but also there's no sun cover. So we are going to build a wooden stand over it with fabric that can cover over it so the kids, you know, will not get trapped or anything of that nature. So that's the final item. And we're working through right now just investigating what will work, what materials we can use, but that is the proposal we'd like to put before the board. And if there are any questions or thoughts, we would appreciate it.
I love the idea of attractive entrances for children. I'm really glad you're thinking about that. Just one question. What's in the storage? If it's like tricycles or something, is that going to be hard for staff to... I mean, is it too far away to get out the things they need for where they use?
Chris? I guess I'm a little bit curious as to how your group... came to decide to do the Tidy Tigers project. And also, could we just see who's here from your leadership class, 16, that's here?
Yeah. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, please come forward and introduce yourselves.
This is part of leadership. This is what you do here, Coach. And we're harmless.
My name is Nancy Bigley. I'm the career tech at San Luis High, and so I'm familiar with the site. So.
My name is Jessica Hamilton. I'm a graphic designer with my company up in Atascadero, and I'm part of Leadership Class 16.
Hi, I'm Debbie Malicote. I work for the City of San Luis Obispo, and I'm in charge of the shade structure for the sandbox area.
Good evening. I'm Eric Justison with RRM Design Group. I'm the proud father of two Tiny Tiger graduates and two Tiny Tiger teachers, so... I have a personal interest in this, and we're pleased to offer a little support to the school.
And I'm Kathleen Richin, and I'm with United Way of San Luis Obispo County. And I'm in charge of donations and fundraising, so if anybody's interested, call me.
Could you just maybe give us the 1 minute briefing, and for the public that's watching us on TV, about what Leadership San Luis is and how that benefits the community?
Sure. The program, as it was represented to me and the way I understand it, is that members of the community who are either viewed by their employers or others as future leaders or believe themselves to be leaders are brought together and are put together for a year. We go away for a 2.5-day retreat, get to know each other and get to know about leadership. And then it's the second Friday of each month, we get together on a different topic. One is arts and education. We just recently did civil and criminal justice on a prior occasion, and we just recently did media and public relations. And basically it offers an opportunity to future leaders to understand all the diverse areas of the county, how the county works, and what is part of the leadership. It also offers a great potential, and actually it's my personal interest, to get to know some really great people and, I think, fine leaders. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Unger?
Yes, just...
If I may, I also want to thank all of the members of Class 16 and appreciate the folks who have shown up tonight to take time to explain the project to us. And just as the school district, I was pleased that Nancy had an opportunity to introduce herself as well, Nancy Begley, our career technician at San Luis Obispo High School, and how proud we are that she is a part of this great group.
And Mrs. Dickinson reminds me that Mrs. Waterbury is here. So, Mrs. Waterbury, if you could stand up and we can recognize her as working with us, too. Thank you. Great. Any other comments or questions from the board? Okay. Mr. Millar says, let them eat cake. And at that, let's... Okay, let's get started again if everybody's ready. Let's move on to public comment. And if there's any, we have two requests for public comment. And the only thing I would suggest is you can speak to us now or you can speak to us to the specific item when it comes up on the agenda. Either way is fine. It's probably better since you're speaking on item number 5, if you could just wait a few minutes until we get to item number 5. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, let's move on then to our item number 1, which are reports by school staff. Is there any school staff that would like to make a report at this time? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to item number 2. And that's the status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Oh, the status of the state budget. This is the fifth, I think, longest in the history of the state of California duration of an overdue budget, and the stalemate continues. The budget is lacking one vote from one Republican in order to make it work. The Senate has passed to private and public sector projects. So therein lies the rub, if you will, on the state budget. In the meantime, whatever ends up coming down the pike with compromises and things related to the budget, the impact on San Luis Coastal doesn't look like it's going to be anything significant to be worried about. So in terms of the state budget process, we will continue to watch and check out what's going to happen. We also have been monitoring our property taxes carefully, and the city The county auditor's office is in charge of calculating the distribution of property taxes, and there's been a new law passed this year related to railroads and their impact on utilities. And so there's a component that's rather new for the staff to calculate. So they're a little bit behind. We would hope to have some concrete information about the size of our property tax revenues for the current year that we're in. And we just don't have that yet. We'll let you know as soon as we get it and let you know how close our guesses were on our budget process.
Russell, can you tell us any more about the mandatory cost reimbursement issue? I read or heard that they have suspended or are talking about suspending reimbursement payments.
Mandated cost reimbursement? Mandated cost reimbursement is one of those items in the state budget which is often put aside. And there's a provision in the state constitution that requires the state to repay to educational agencies amount of money expended for mandatory actions that they're mandated actions that they're required to take. But the fine print says that all they have to do is make a payment. And the payment that's required is there's 32 mandates in the state. They only have to make a $1,000 payment to all, not individually to districts, but in total. So the amount that has to be budgeted as a minimum is $32,000. The amount of mandated cost reimbursements generally runs in the $100 million range. So when they go to process their budget numbers and they find out they're a little bit short, they suspend mandated cost payments. Constitutionally, they have to pay us. And so what we saw last year was a huge...
Abel Maldonado is the only Republican who broke ranks and voted for what I think is a pretty much education-friendly budget. And I had the opportunity to call his office and thank him for that vote on the behalf of San Luis Coastal.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman? Okay. Let's move on then to item number 3, which is a resolution number 010708, delegation of signature authority. Mr. Miller.
Sorry. The delegation of signature authority is a annual event that we have to process as a requirement in order to delegate authority to sign legal documents and fiscal documents, and we present for your approval that that request.
Move approval of resolution number 010708.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Millar, and I think Mr. Buckman got you on the quick second. Any discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none, Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Doug Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Peter?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Let's move on then to item number 5, which is a request to waive developer fees, Sun Care Foundation. Mr. Miller?
Yes, if I might preempt for just a second, I wanted to declare for the board and anybody watching that my daughter happens to be employed by an organization that's connected to the folks who are requesting this developer fee exemption, and so I'm going to remove myself from the table and not participate in the discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. From time to time, we collect developer fees from a number of different agencies and individuals, and from time to time there are organizations that request a waiver of the developer fees. Staff does not grant the waivers, but it does agree under certain conditions to present to the board that request to have that fee waived. In this particular case, this is an organization that is building some manufactured homes on a parcel off of Buckley Road, which are designed to present the opportunity for kids. I think that the individuals who are here tonight, and I imagine would like to speak to you, have requested a waiver of their required developer fees. and I think they have a few more details to add to that. So I would invite them to come to the podium and make their request at this time.
Okay, we have two requests to speak on this item, and the first is Jack Gould. Jack, would you come on up, please?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just give you a little background. I'm Jack Gould, President and Director of SunCare Foundation, and we operate a program on a ranch on Buckley Road, 40 acres, which is a mentoring program for young men who are 18 to 22 usually. And these are folks who are there voluntarily. They live at the ranch. They work at the ranch. And what they do during their time, which is usually 6 months to a year that they've committed to be there, is these are folks who have probably graduated from high school, maybe tried some things, but they don't have a particular plan or direction for their life. They don't know what they want to do. So they come to us. We help with career counseling. We do life skills. We have them work in the morning. They get work experience. We pay them for that. In the afternoon, we have classes, most of which are individual, with them to help them put a specific plan together for where they want to go for their future, whether that be job, vocational, college, whatever. And so in this instance, we're bringing in two manufactured homes for our students, and they will only be used by our students. And the fees on this were about $7,400 for the school district. And there's a couple of things that I think will show that there's not impact on the schools. Number one, we're not adding people to our facility. We're actually just moving them out of one housing to another. Our ranch house there is a historic 120 to 40-year-old ranch house, and we're moving them into this manufactured housing. In addition, these are all single folks, no children, so they wouldn't generate any extra impact on the school district. We did receive a waiver from the Department of Planning and Building because of the public good that they saw in this. We were before the Board of Supervisors last week. Where bills get paid basically is through income from agricultural projects and that type of thing. So we're just appealing to the board to say this is a lot of money for us as a nonprofit, and we would like you to consider waiving that fee because of lack of impact.
Hey, could we inquire for some factual information from this gentleman?
Sure. Yeah, please.
Sir, does SunCare as a 501c3 own title to the property?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
And are there restrictions in either your bylaws or the 501c3 status that I guess what I'm looking for is what if you guys change your program or decide you're going to stop doing that? Are there restrictions within your bylaws that would conflict with you ending the program?
Our bylaws are written specifically for the Alpha Academy program. That is our purpose, and that's the purpose for which we were approved and granted for the tax exemption.
Okay. Great.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar, in keeping with the spirit of your question, should the board find it appropriate to waive their fees, one of the things staff would ask is that we put a restrictive covenant in their deed that would reflect that as long as the 501c is operated, then the fees are waived. But should that change, then the fees are due and payable with interest at that time.
Thanks. Let me just follow up, if I may, Mark. Mm-hmm. By doing that, if with a change of ownership recorded, change of title in the clerk's office, the county clerk's office, then we would get some kickback to review the stat.
They'd have to pay to remove the restriction on the deed, and the repayment would be the arrearages on the fees. We have no method. The problem, and you've hit it, okay? You've hit it, two of the basic problems, and then one is how do we maintain that this is not going to present students to the district care for, and we don't have any instruments or methodologies to monitor that property. So this is one way that's done on occasion.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, if I could. First of all, you have a very nice website. I took the time to go look at it today.
Thank you, sir.
One of the things, because we do this because we care about kids, is I can't find, or I haven't found, or I'm just not reading well enough today, the number of people, the number of young gentlemen that your
house into there is, we do have three-tier bunk beds, one room. It makes for a great way to get along with everybody and to know each other intimately, but it's part of the process that we have out there for taking care of these guys. Most of you know we serve a population that, quite frankly, in this county is not being addressed, the 18 to 22, 23-year-old male who is out there someplace with no idea where he's going, how he's going to get there, so on and so forth. Back in the 1950s, it was kind of easy because somebody got drafted or they had other situations. We have now groups of young men who have absolutely no clue. They may not think they're good enough for college. They don't have the life skills to figure out what a checkbook is, how to do a budget, why do you have to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, this is really some basic stuff that we do. Some of this underserved population is has had some very, very difficult, and several of the professional educators in this room know some of the life stories of some of these young men that we have, and they can be challenged. And we just provide a safe place out there where they can come, you know, we call it kind of loving them through the mess, but the object of the exercise is to have a place there so that they understand why we earn our way as opposed to take grants or government funds or something like that. Now, you may know some members of the community that have made donations to us, and we would take them. We don't say no, but we don't actively go out and seek those things because we want them. We want our behavior to model exactly what they should be doing, which is earning their own way and this type of thing, and how to do that and how to live. I mean, we pay minimum wage out there, and then we work them through how to get through those kinds of issues and how to be successful. It may not look like $7,385 is a lot of money. It really is to us, and we would appreciate any consideration that the board could do. We've been out there 9 years, and before I retired, I was on their advisory board out there, and we've had some marvelous successes, and then we've had some kids walk down the driveway that would absolutely break your heart.
In this request is any potential precedent setting that may be established through this action, and being very clear, the board needs to be very clear about its rationale and reasons if they do choose to grant it, why they've chosen to grant it, and any conditions that they attach to it, and that kind of thing. Because we get calls to waive the fees all the time for a variety of reasons, and staff just basically denies them on the basis of board policy. Sometimes I recall in the 6 years that I've been here, I've only ever brought one other item which you did not approve. But other than that, it has not been a regular occurrence for the board to enter into this process. So I would ask that you walk carefully down the road of consideration, and if it's chosen to grant the waiver, be very clear about why you're doing so, because it would open a door that I'm not quite sure, unless you define it for me, how to close it on the rest of the requests that we might have.
Is there any reason why these young men don't avail themselves of school district services like adult education classes, for instance?
Typically, what we're helping them with is while they're with us, their time is pretty much consumed in our program. Once they leave, typically they will go to vocational training. We've had mechanic school, military, Cuesta, a number of other options. Some of them have gotten college scholarships and that kind of thing. So while they're in our program, they really don't have the time for that. I might also add one piece as far as rationale. We actually make our facility available to the schools, and we have no charge for that. We've probably had more than 100 kids from community schools come, and they will do community service projects. We've done leadership training for them and that type of thing, which we do for the schools on their request. And generally, it's the community schools.
Well, I'm going to support this measure. I don't know whether we're going to take action on it tonight or not, even though I'm not sure that it's one of those issues that, that may need to come back again. And I'll take a stab at the rationale. First of all, I think as a matter of board practice, we should only approve, frankly, a group of people who I know exactly the description. In fact, I've had a son who fit into this category, and I'm thrilled to say that partly because of Pacific Beach Continuation Program and partly because of maturity, and he kind of came out of that situation, and I know other young men who are still in that situation. So for those reasons, I think in this individual case that I feel comfortable supporting the waiver of fees.
Mr. Buckman?
I can, at this point, unless there's further discussion that changes my mind, I can support Mr. Millar's comments, only that I would add that the deed restriction would have to be in place, and that there, that'll probably take care of it.
Other comments from board members?
Just a question for Mr. Miller. Can you characterize some of the other requests that we get, sort of what category they fall into? Are they mostly 501c3s that come before us?
I don't think so. I don't think we could categorize them if, as a majority. We have senior housing requests. We have church requests. We have agricultural buildings. All of those kinds of projects are brought in on a, not a regular basis, but an occasional basis.
Is the rationale from those groups typically that they are not impacting the district?
Yes.
Okay. And yet, on a case-by-case basis, you have chosen not to bring those to the board. What was compelling enough about this request that you decided, you and the staff decided, that it was something that should be decided by the board?
It had a synergism of kids, youth, if you will. Even though they were outside of our age group, it still had some sort of a, as an attachment for kids. It had the support of other government agencies also, which was probably the most compelling issue. This seems to be a community-wide action, if you will. And so that those two items for me brought it forth. I typically want to protect our developer fee revenue source because of its absolute necessity for us to be able to fund future schools. Should we have growth in the future, heard it at other government agencies just besides ours. So it seemed to be a board issue in this particular case.
Well, I'm going to support it with Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar's comments. However, I would ask that you come back to us with specific language protecting the district in the future, and I'd like to know if that language is enforceable as well. One thing Mrs. Dickinson did bring up is, you know, there could be impact on our adult education programs. The second thing is, if we look at that part of in our service area, that's the portion of our service area that we're predicting growth in. So under those conditions, I would ask for it to come back with specific language and protections for the district. That would be my thinking on this one. Mr. Spafor?
Initially, I wasn't supportive of this because I felt that the district always had the concern about not having the funding for programs. All this goes to capital improvement into buildings, but I felt it was somewhat counterproductive because we're in the business of assisting students as they grow older so they can also be prepared to make the right decisions upon graduation. But in hearing the discussion tonight and listening to the comments that Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar have made, I believe that on a case-by-case basis, with the protection that if the purpose of this organization changes and that the use of that property no longer is to support this age group in any respect, that then the district would have the right, upon any change in ownership or direction or status, to recoup the money with the appropriate interest. Because I think although we have the concern that our district not lose revenue when we so dearly need that for our students, I believe that we've all mentioned tonight, we recognize the fact that as a community, there are many ways to help young men and women, men in this case, who are going through difficult situations. And I think that may be the compelling factor for me in supporting this.
Well, I agree with those who've spoken before me. This request has no impact on us as a district. It brings no burden to bear. Given a change of use on that property, I have no problem with granting the waiver.
So, Mrs. Dickinson,
how would we know if the use changed? How does that happen?
What I was going to suggest, if I may, is that we just ask again, Mr. Miller, to come back with language just reflecting the board's desires, and we would have to take action on this, I'm sure, in a vote. And I'd rather know what I'm voting on than just go ahead with something that giving direction to staff. Yes, Mrs. Roger.
Would it be appropriate at this time to ask the gentleman if they had any opposition to a deed restriction of the type we're discussing?
I was waiting for permission.
Oh, please. Yeah.
I didn't raise my hand.
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying good attention.
That actually is something that the county has a fee for public facilities, and they're proposing the same type of thing. So that language will be available through that process, which we might forward over and maybe save some work. And their condition, that it isn't finalized yet, but again, if the property should sell to someone and not be used for this purpose, then the then current fee at that point would be due at the time of the change of title. So we could make that available.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Then I would suggest, if the board supports this, that we move this to next month's agenda, and that Mr. Miller is able to receive that information from Mr. Gould, and that we have it presented to us in the form of a motion with those contingencies attached that protect the district in case the usage is altered in any way that's inconsistent with our understanding.
Ms.
Dickinson? One thing I think it's good to model or teach the young people too is to do their fair share in supporting the schools. So part of me thinks that it would fit the program to support the schools. And I don't know anything about your outfit. I was a teacher for a year at a group home that, and I know all situations are different, but that was supposedly a nonprofit, and a lot of unusual things happened there.
So that I'm here talking about are very specific, oriented towards usage, and it would revert back to a fee basis if the usage wasn't as stated or as it's been planned out to be.
Okay,
Chris,
yes.
I think maybe looking also at a content or a requirement on the part of SunCare, a notification requirement in addition to the restriction on the deed, because that will encompass, it'll put an affirmative duty on them to notify us if the program changes, but the land hasn't changed hands.
Okay, so we'll, I'm sure you'll be in contact with Mr. Miller, and we'll have this brought back to us either at the next meeting or, I guess, as soon as possible, next meeting after that, and you'll let them know. Okay. All right, let's move on then to item number 6, which is employment of applicant on basis of a provisional internship permit. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. One of the results of the highly qualified teacher regulations of the No Child Left Behind Act and one of the newer requirements of the Commission on Teacher Credentialing is to ensure subject matter competence for all teachers, which is a good thing. A provisional intern permit is intended for an individual who has expertise in a subject matter yet has not fulfilled the requirements yet as outlined by the Commission on Teacher Credentialing. As of 2003, that requirement is met by passing a California subject examination for teachers. That's called CSET, and being in a qualified university program. This is being asked for on behalf of our prospective choir director hire for San Luis Obispo High School. Our nationwide search for this position did not yield a desirable candidate who was holding a full credential, and this is a part-time position, which may explain part of that. Paul Osborne, our desired candidate, highly desired candidate, is a graduate of Concordia College, which is one of the most prestigious music schools in the nation, majoring in choral music education. He passed 2 out of 3 sections of the CSET exam and is only waiting for the third section to be offered by the state of California so that he can take and hopefully pass the third part. He is also in the credential program at Chapman, which we partner with. The CCTC requires that this item not be just part of the consent agenda, but is made public and subject to discussion so that it is known that we are seeking to hire an individual under this provision. We have every confidence that Mr. Osborne will complete his requirements and are expecting of a successful teaching experience. And that's our record.
Stool of public education.
Correct.
That we never hear about. And I'm trying to refresh my memory. Even though we approve this tonight, doesn't this need to go to them and be approved as well? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, exactly. We will tomorrow be sending a letter with the board's approval to the California Commission on Teachers Credentialing asking for the provisional permit, and then the Chapman University will also be ensuring that they're going to provide the educational program to fulfill the credential. And so it's all three of us have to partner together to get it done. And the Teachers Association has to weigh in and say, yeah, we agree you're not taking away a position. You're actually putting somebody on the salary schedule where they belong, and et cetera, et cetera.
How are these waivers doing up in Sacramento? Or they seem to be going?
They're doing well as long as we're doing this exactly,
okay.
Crossing our T's, dotting our I's. And part of the reason is a couple years ago, we were able to get emergency permits for situations like this. There's no such thing as an emergency permit for teachers any longer. And those are only for substitute teachers for 30 days. It's the only emergency type of a permit or credential. So we have to make sure that we are ensuring that we have people who have subject matter competence when we hire them. And that's a good thing. And there's just a few more hoops we have to jump through.
So it's been moved and seconded. Is there any other discussion on this item? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to pull an item. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 8, approval of multiple and single subject and special education specialist mild moderate level 1 teaching credential internship program with University of Laverne. 9, approval of proposed salary increase for position not represented by bargaining unit. 10, acceptance of donations. 11, disposition of surplus property. 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Okay. 13, approval of purchase orders. 14, approval of warrant and payroll. 15, destruction of Class 3 records. And 16, approval of summer field study trips. Somebody like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll move that we approve 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, 14, 15, and 16.
Second. Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Peter and seconded by Mr. Spadafore to approve items 7 through 11 and 13 through 16. Any discussion? None?
Instead of an automated system, because I've worked as a substitute teacher, and I personally really like talking to a real person instead of this machine with codes and all that.
Well, we're actually quite excited about this possibility for two reasons.
Let's hear about it.
One is the system we have is dying and crashing on a regular basis. It's computer-based, and our renewal is up in January. However, we're unsure we're going to be able to start the school year with our system
not crashing and not being able to cover our substitute needs. So one of the reasons we're excited about moving forward is it. The second reason is because this is not just a calling system, it's a web-based system where we would anticipate most of our employees and most of our substitutes will take care of all their substitute needs via computer. They'll be able to access their own substitute system, find out where the jobs are, where the job opportunities. This will still call the substitutes based on what the teacher's input, but a lot of it will be able to be web-based instead of phone-based. People have the option of calling in or using their computer, and they can also add lesson plans and specific instructions. We can add maps and all those kinds of things that are important for us. So that's one of the reasons we're excited about it. We did, in the old days, have someone calling. It meant somebody starting work about 5 in the morning. And there have been days this year where we have needed about 120 substitutes. I don't look forward to those kinds of impact on our human resources. So it is a little more impersonal having the machines do it, but I think it's more practical for us also personally.
Well, that's interesting hearing about that.
Mr. Unger.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were turning off your mic.
I was just going to move that we pass this. And then go ahead.
Oh, well, I wanted to just ask, you know, I don't mind talking to a machine first thing in the morning. You know, it's...
So, the machine would rather talk to you in person.
Probably. I just wanted to see if the LCD projector that was a theft item, if we have any coverage for that. How does that work?
We are covered on those types of cases, and we get replacement minus a...
$500.
$2,500.
Oh, I will defer to Mrs. Dickinson on what she would like to do with this item.
Okay, I make a motion that we approve the furniture and equipment requests.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Dickinson and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor? It carries 7-0.
In terms of stakeholders, we had a little discussion about that at our board retreat, and I know that the teachers have wanted to communicate with the board and suggested having someone sit like the kids do, the high school students. And I know the board didn't really like that idea. But I was wondering if there would be something that was similar but different where we had, we get the little newsletters from we hear from the high schools, and we get little newsletters from elementary and junior high. If we could have sort of a rotating teacher from those kind of schools too, and from the high school, just talk about what's going on at their school, and be invited to stay just as a teacher's voice if they wanted to participate in anything. And it wouldn't be representing an association, but just representing a teacher's viewpoint. I'm on the board now, and I'm a teacher, and bring up teachers' viewpoints, but there's going to be times when there is nobody on the board, perhaps, that that has that every single day in the classroom kind of perspective, just to think about how to incorporate an ongoing perspective without having it be political, you might say. So just to think about it.
I could be interested in supporting that as soon as we get invited to send a board member to sit on the CTA board meetings.
And I, my initial sense is that we already have opportunities for people to participate as we're currently constructed. They can attend meetings, and they can certainly talk. I would be happy to hear, though, from representatives of the various schools and to hear what's going on at different schools throughout the year. I think that would be a great opportunity for us. And in brief comments, but again, we have that opportunity during one of the items. I believe it's item number one, reports from school staff and student representatives. So, okay. So,
can I ask you about that? Does that mean on item one, anybody from any school could come and report on what their school's doing?
We've never had anybody who's asked to do that.
Public comment.
We also have public
correct provides that any person in the school community or in the community in general that has any issue or any subject matter that they want to discuss with the board has the absolute right to appear at a meeting and be on the agenda to speak if it's connected to school issues. So,
okay, well, that's good.
Okay, anything else for right now? Let's move on then to item number 19, which is reports by board members and administrators. Is there anybody who would like to? Mr. Buckman.
Surprise. We saw a lot from ROP this evening, and I represent this group at the ROP County Board, and it was almost a fairy tale that occurred this year. A very small school district to the south, Los Angeles Unified School District, forgot to turn in a report, and the state gave them about 60 days to turn that report in. And with the thousands of administrators in that district, they were unable to somehow turn that report in on time. And what that meant is it put hundreds of millions of dollars. Mark, go ahead, give me the number.
Yeah, it's $12 million.
$12 million. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. $12 million into the system for all the other districts in the state that were able to file their reports on time. So I'm proud to report that in our county there will be $350,000 more to be distributed among the 10 school districts and the children of this county.
Well, thanks. Thank you, our neighbors to the south, for your largesse. That's all I can say. Mr. Spadafor.
I was invited about 3 weeks ago to speak at the Exchange Club of San Luis Obispo, which is a group of business people, and about 40 of their members were at the Elks Club, and it ended up being about a 45-minute discussion, question and answer presentation on public education. And it was a very positive experience. A lot of comments about how well our district provides educational opportunities to students, many including Mr. Miller's father, who used to be the principal. Mr. Miller was a Pacheco. His father was a member of that group. And it was a worthwhile opportunity and a good discussion with these business people.
And on a couple of Saturday nights from now, I just want to acknowledge a student that's a high school student at San Luis Obispo High School. Anybody else? Okay. Before we move on to item number 4, I would like to ask that we take just a brief recess so that Mr. Spadafor and I can talk to Dr. Matakovich for a moment about the meeting that we'll be having on Thursday night, the special board meeting. So if we could take just a short break and then reconvene. Thank you.
The meeting is going to resume, and item number 4 is next on the agenda as agreed upon. And Mr. Miller, I think, is presenting
this. Thank you. We're bringing forth tonight a item for information purposes and discussion and question. I would alert the board that this is an item that will be continuously in front of you probably for a number of months. It represents a fundamental change in a very important area of program offering and finance and all the elements of a school district and our reliance on others and how that has all changed. And this item is, as I said, a fundamental change in how we're doing particular things and financing particular actions. So we wanted to start off with a discussion about a piece that's related to how we were doing it and a piece that's related to how we're going to do it, and then some of the elements of uncertainty about what the future holds for us in this particular area. So be prepared to hear about this, and don't be afraid to call or question any of these issues that occur to you in the next couple of months. Jackie's been involved in this, and I've been involved in this. So we've had the process now for 2.5, almost 3 years of discussions with all of the school districts in the county of San Luis Obispo. And what it's related to is our special ed programs that and the funding, particularly the funding of those programs, as it has been in the past, handled by the County Office of Education. We've had a centralized program, and that money was passed into the County Office of Education. Particular pieces were withdrawn, and they were paid for specific items along the way. And then the rest that was left over was used to pay for the county-operated classrooms, special day classes, severely handicapped, those types of programs. Invariably, over the years, as the population of special ed students increased and the severity of their conditions and the program offering costs increased, there was not sufficient money coming from state and federal sources to pay the tab. So we had what they called excess costs. And excess costs were the amount that was deficient from state and federal funds that districts had to make up for within their own general fund revenues. The excess costs of districts, charged to districts, started off about 5 years ago at being about a $200,000 bill for us. Okay, so the very first year we were hit with an excess cost bill, it was around $200,000. And it was after a pay increase for the county, a particular increase in autism population, and a couple of other issues that happened in the county, particularly the diminishment of their reserve account that was in place for a number of years that they drew upon to pay for excess costs for a particular amount of time. As the excess costs were passed into districts, they also started increasing for districts. We just finished this 06-07 year, and we project in 07-08 an excess cost in excess of $500,000. So there's a steep increase in our excess costs. This caused, well, in addition to that, the programs and the identification of special ed students started to change on a district-by-district basis. Lucia Marr identifies students differently than San Luis Coastal, which is different than Atascadero, which is different than Paso Robles. So you had different identifiers in place with different standards being set, and so different numbers of students were arising that weren't proportional to the size of the district. And this then put a burden on some districts to pay the costs of other districts. And there was some inefficiencies in that particular infrastructure that was important to consider, particularly for the spectrum of services related to autism and how we would approach those particular programs. So within the idea, we came up with, if you will, almost a menu that the county office would construct, and you would have a core program, and then out of that core program you would also have particular side orders, if you will, that you could purchase and add into a program for individualized children. And out of that idea grew, well, how does the money flow? Where's the money going to go to pay for that particular menu item that you're choosing? And it was determined that one of the most efficient ways that provided great flexibility for all districts and probably benefited kids best was for the dollars to follow the kids. Now what's been adopted by the superintendents is a model which has the state and federal monies coming directly to individual districts. So they now get their special ed money from the source. And with that money, they now have two basic choices, if you will, though it could end up being multiple other choices. But for the ease of the description right now, we'll stick with two different choices. One would be a county-operated program, and the county has constructed a menu, and they're menu calls out for a core program to be charged, and I make this up. This is a totally made-up number at this moment, but it's about $15,000 to $18,000. I'm sorry. No, that's correct. $15,000 to $18,000 per student, okay, on their core program. And then if you purchase other particular services, that only adds to your menu item. When we look at their menu, we then consider the second option, which is to offer the program ourselves. And that's where the flexibility comes into, and that's where the fairness of the issue really resides, because different districts can approach special ed in different ways depending on the philosophy of the board, the administration, the teachers, whatever influences their approach now has an impact on their flexibility of being able to afford that program. An example would be if we calculated the cost on a program, we will continue to have and we will bring forth other issues. But fiscally speaking, the program offered within the district has some built-in cost savings to it over what the county could do. What we end up with in our agreement is a whole spectrum of changes that now put the control of special ed programs within the individual district's hands. We ran into much discussion about how to protect different members of our group. An example, how do we protect the county office? So if San Luis Coastal goes to the county and says, yeah, I'll sign up for the program, and then for some reason or another changes at mine, it puts the county in dire straits, considering that the layoff notices didn't go out in a timely manner, they purchased capacity somewhere. So there's some requirements for us in terms of timing for notification. One of those requirements requires us to give a year and a day notice prior to withdrawal from a county program. So if we commit to it this year, we're committed until we withdraw a year and a day ahead of time. The implementation of this takes place in 08-09. Dr. Crocker from the County Office of Ed recognized that the superintendents didn't vote on this plan until after July 1st, so the year and a day, requirement already had a two-year spectrum attached to it. That was too great for most districts just to live with. So he agreed that we could give notification of withdrawal from program, but not have to make our final commitment until October of 2007 for the 08-09 year. And so that's where we stand with that particular piece that's a protection for the county office, a requirement for us. There was a large amount of discussion about small districts, how to protect them. The amount of money that they earn from AB 602 isn't sufficient for them to even begin to operate their own particular program infrastructure. They don't even have enough money in some cases to be able to hire a teacher to operate for a class of three or four kids. How do we handle their need to be able to solicit services from the county, or in our particular case, because we're a little bit larger than some, maybe we allow a plan that was effective July 1st, 2008. In the end, I think this is a very beneficial change to the overall structure that represents a recognition of the change in special education. We have had an explosion of population. We've had an explosion of offerings and programs. We've had autism go from an almost unknown particular segment of special ed into a major player in terms of impact on school districts and kids. It's a representation of the change within that particular environment for school districts. I would encourage you to have conversation with us, to look at this plan and to express your considerations of it and impressions, so that we can get back and forth with the board and figure out how to best approach the coming months. We have given notification under the timeline given to us by Dr. Crocker that we anticipate taking back 4 or 5 classes related to special ed. We will continue to look at those 5 that we gave notification on and bring to the board our information as we develop it. So we're in the mode right now of looking at taking back 5, looking at how we can do it effectively, efficiently, for a cost savings, and bring it to the board with the information attached.
Ms. Dickinson?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, the way special ed looks on a like, let's say, Arroyo Grande High School, I know that's not in our district, but we might have 7, let's say, resource classes and 3 special day classes, which are district. And then we have a county severely handicapped class, which is run by the county, but on our campus, and we mainstream those kids and we know those people, and emotionally disturbed class. Now, the money for the other 10 classes that have been district classes, and I know we have special day classes and resource classes in San Luis Coastal, did that money come through the county all along?
Are these regionalized classes?
No, they're just district classes.
They're district classes? That money did not come from the county. That was just something you were funding from your own coffers.
So we've already had district control of a lot of special ed.
You did. And you had that choice, and you exercised
and this,
that choice.
What about this district, San Luis Coastal?
Classes they operated eventually became deficited. Okay, so the money that wasn't sufficient to pay for their county program classes, which included regionalized classes that the county operated in your district and in our district, mm-hmm, for particular reasons, but notwithstanding that the county program classes, the regional classes, were paid for out of that funds. In addition, the larger districts were running their own classrooms, and they were funding those out of the general fund. Okay, so now the money comes into the district. It looks at the whole spectrum of its offerings, and it says, okay, we can do this, we can do that, and we will be able to probably be a lot more efficient, but absolutely will be more flexible about our offerings to students.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
Mr. Buckman and Mr. Peter.
Thanks. Several questions, but I think right now, as I looked at the plan when I read it, there was a section on 4.17 on transportation costs. Made it sound as if the LEAs would be taking over transportation as well, Russell?
Yes.
It's my understanding that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that on special ed, the buses are different, and that each bus not only has a driver but must have an aide on the bus.
There are requirements of not necessarily an aide, but we're required an aide.
Okay. And so we're prepared at this point to... I mean, the county is set up with a lot of the smaller buses and with the restraints and the lifts. Are we set up at this point to handle that kind of
We provide our own transportation at this time, and we're totally self-sufficient.
Okay. Thanks.
Uh-huh. You know, if you want, why don't we have...
Yeah, we do other students.
Well, we have Ms. Kirk-Martinez, if you want to come here and be part of the conversation.
Hey, go
so
ahead,
we
be
can
part of the conversation.
Just add when we need to with questions.
She's very anxious
to
interrupt, so that's okay. So she gets to do that.
Jackie, do you have something that you wanted to, in response to Mark's question?
I just wanted to clarify that the students that are served through the county office, our district already provides that transportation. That wouldn't change.
Within the county classrooms, we provide transportation for those students, too.
Okay. Mr. Peter?
Russell, is maybe an oversimplified way to think about this, that instead of the money flowing through the county...
There's an element of the contract which addresses legal disputes and considerations, but the short answer to your question is that each district is responsible for the legal defense of its children. So if we have a student in our district... Let me put it another example. Cambria sends us a child with a special condition, and we agree to serve it. Cambria is taking on the responsibility of legally defending that child under the terms of this agreement.
Mr. Millar?
Well,
That's kind of the area I want to get to. But first, can somebody tell me what a low-incidence student is?
Low-incidence student is a student who is either deaf, deaf-blind, orthopedically impaired, visually impaired, or I think that was it,
okay.
Or hearing impaired.
Boy, that's such a confusing term. It almost sounds like it's the less...
They don't have very many of them, as many.
Ah, low incidence.
Low.
I get it. Okay. Now, I was particularly interested in the Appendix 3, and I have to say, it does cover a lot of the possible permutations of arrangements of defendants and co-defendants. Well, let me go through a couple of quick questions. What is the status of insurance coverage for our special ed programs now? I know we had a discussion a year or two ago about potentially arranging for coverage. Where are we on that?
There is no coverage for our special ed lawsuits that relate to the cost of a program. Where we're covered potentially, and we haven't tested this yet, is if we have violated the civil rights of a child, i.e. we don't give FAPE,
right.
Then
okay.
What we have to pay for damages related to not providing FAPE is potentially covered under our insurance policy.
Okay, so it's damages for previously failing to provide FAPE, not the cost of updating
FAPE.
The program
yeah.
coming up.
So each child in their special ed contract perhaps has got different FAPE. Okay, so each child's condition causes it to have a particular need that would be termed FAPE. And those needs can be fiscally not too expensive or very, very expensive. But the insurance policy doesn't cover that piece.
Okay. Let's see. This is just, it's more of a question observation that I think we need to, but even when you do come to agreements like that, you still have an exposure of sorts. And so for me, philosophically, I think the board needs to ask itself, do we want to become a provider of services to the other LEAs and the COE if that's going to increase an already sort of disturbing trend in special ed? And I'll wait for an answer, and then I've got a couple of other things.
Well, just to jump in, my understanding of it, and Jackie can correct too, is that it's our responsibility to provide FAPE. How we provide FAPE may involve a vendor, it may involve the county, it may involve another school district, but if somebody says FAPE wasn't provided, the non-provider is us.
Okay.
And that's where the shoe fits.
And I guess the last observations, do you want to follow up and ask?
Could I think
also Mr. Millar? Jackie had a comment that she wanted to make relative.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Jackie.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
In regards to the other school districts, the smaller school districts, currently, if they're unable to provide FAPE because of their small school district, we have provided services, and it has been with an understanding that they are the district of residence still, and we are the district of providing the service. Regardless, it goes back to the district of residence. We have always been the one that has looked to that district to make sure that we have served their student correctly, and we invite them to all IEP meetings, and that would continue and that wouldn't change. When they also send their student to us, they are also like a parent giving trust to us that we will continue to provide that FAPE that's agreed upon in that IEP.
Okay. We make sure that they have a piece in the process of involvement, interaction, and responsibility. But ultimately, particularly small districts need to be able to send their students to somebody else because they can't provide.
Right.
So we need to recognize that. And within our SELPA, which is the countywide organization, it's a recognition of responsibility for the largest to take care of the smalls. Additionally, in this model, there's a built-in flexibility component which benefits districts to look to each other to share facilities, administration, and teachers for a more cost-effective manner. Because let's face it, how we do that type of a program with neighboring districts.
And I think Dr. Valentine had a comment.
And I'll be brief on it, but one of the marks on the plus column for considering taking back classes is precisely that we gain more control over whether FAPE is provided to a child or not when we parcel out services to other vendors. We're at the mercy of whatever shortcomings they may encounter, and if the shortcomings they encounter result in the child not receiving FAPE, the legal responsibility falls back on us. We feel a lot more comfortable being sort of the masters of our own fate. Not that we won't face some of the same challenges that vendors face, but we feel a little more a higher comfort level when we're in charge of our own program.
Okay. Mr. Miller. I've only got a couple more things. And I guess my sense of, I don't know how well the SELPA and the LEAs get along and how COE and everybody gets along, but I did notice that where there are disagreements about the apportionment of cost and settlement and those kinds of things, that we go to a superintendent kind of resolution attempt. Then we go to, I believe it's the SELPA Executive Committee, and then, failing that, we go to the Governance Council. I don't know how well all these people get along.
That's a current model that we use right now. Nothing really changed in that appeals process, if you will.
Is there a I guess that's what I'm getting at. Is there a process? Is it more than just you go to the council and say, hey, we think this apportionment of costs is wrong? Is there a process, an alternative dispute resolution process, if everybody can't come to agreement on something? And is it a non-existent problem? And you can tell me that and I'll stop.
It's not about the cost of serving a student. It's when it's in litigation.
That's what I meant, too. Yeah.
And it is a collaborative effort to make a decision at the superintendent's level.
Okay. And then my final question is more voicing a concern, and it's one of those things you always say to your kid, even though you always know they know it, but if you didn't say it, you'd feel bad if something happened. Are we confident that as this landscape gets more complicated, that we're going to know what's going on with every single one of our children who are special needs kids, and that we're not going to have somebody, you know, fall through the cracks somewhere because it's gotten a lot more complicated? That's kind of what I want to know.
That's the most important.
We're very confident in Jackie's ability to monitor each and every student.
As am I.
Thank you for that vote of confidence.
Just one of those parent things.
We are assessing that right now as with every student that IEP gets written and every student that is assessed. We want to cross every T, dot every I, and like Dr. Valentine said, we will be able to have more of that wrapping our arms around that student and knowing what's
going on. Must be made by October 15th, and that's why you'll be sharing in discussion from between now and then. And between now and then, we're going to examine exactly what are the pros and cons of each of those five programs and bring you a recommendation for your action to withdraw from 0, 1, or 5 programs, however many make sense at that time.
And I think Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, sir. I want to echo Walt's comments because I've got it here circled. As we started this discussion, all I was hearing about was dollars, and it concerned me because we weren't talking about the children. So I'm glad that that's come up, and I want to echo that really should be what our number one concern is. Will this model serve the children better? The other group of people that are going to be impacted are our staff, and as I read one part of this, there was one person who seems like is going to be majorly impacted. I'm on 4.17, where it says the contracting LEAs will invite the special education director from the sending LEA to all IEPs. That means suddenly we're going to have our staff going from IEPs in our district. If we send to others or they send to us, are we really planning on sending our teams out to every IEP held in every location?
It's actually the opposite. It would be the small school districts coming to us, that director coming to us, to help monitor their student that they're sending. It is our goal to serve our students and not vendor the service out.
Okay.
So it would be the opposite.
The contract, okay, we'll invite. So we will not be attending IEPs in Cayucas?
It's highly likely not.
Okay.
Correct.
I just wanted to make sure you were alive and well in a year.
If I may add, currently when we refer a student to the County Office of Education, which we do currently, it is a program specialist or myself or coordinator or special education district staff that attends those meetings. So instead of doubling up administration or doubling up special education teachers for the transition, we're serving our students.
Okay. Think,
that is in the plus column.
Thank you, Jake. Dr. Valentine had a comment.
Just in response to
the responsibility for providing FAPE lies with the district of residence. So
correct.
So that if we accept a child from another district into our program and there's a challenge to FAPE having been provided, that challenge must be defended by the referring district and not ourselves. Am I understanding that correctly?
It's both responsibilities, but the primary responsibility lies with the district of residence. Because if we are the receiving district, if we cannot provide FAPE, we would refer back to the district of residence, and they would be responsible for providing FAPE. However, if it was a question of whether we provided FAPE or not, it would be a dual responsibility, and that's where the superintendents come together to determine how we will negotiate or discuss and litigate that if it was to come to be.
Okay.
Regardless, it's the district of residence that's responsible, but anytime we serve a student, whether it's ours or theirs, there is a possibility of being enjoined and collaborating with
okay.
the pros and the cons.
I understand. Thank you. And then
excuse me.
Russell, you said that there were five areas that we had given sort of preliminary notice that we wanted to pull out of?
Correct.
Can you tell me what those are?
I would defer to Ms. Kirk-Martinez.
The severely handicapped preschool class located at Chris Jesperson School. The two severely handicapped classes located at C.L. Smith Elementary, Los Osos Middle School severely handicapped class, and one of the San Luis High severely handicapped classes.
Thank you.
And then before Mr. Buckman, but Mr. Miller, you had a comment?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
A question I had just on how we are proceeding and the information before the board between now and October 15th. With the identification of these five classes, is part of the discussion going to be not only the structuring of those classes, which will include financial costs, but also staffing?
Population of about 10 kids, and it can go 12, it can go 8, but let's just say there's 10 kids in there. They're figuring a per child basis of $19,000 on that basis. We would construct the same model for your usage. We would tell you what it costs for the teacher, for the aides, for the custodian, for the legal services, and all those particular expenses. We're working on developing that type of information so we can share it with you in the future.
Mr. Buckman.
Okay. Hopefully the last question. This is a two-part question. Do we have the ability to deny or must we accept a student if we have a program that's special and Lucia Mar's got three kids and we've got six? Do we have to accept students from Lucia Mar under this plan? Or do we have the ability to say no?
We have the ability to say no. It's
okay.
A collaborative effort, and we want to serve our students first, and we have the ability to say no
okay.
if we cannot provide FAPE.
Okay. And can you can you say that by taking students from other districts, we are not increasing our liability, our chance for lawsuits?
I cannot say that.
Okay.
There's not going to be any ability to safeguard us from those lawsuits, primarily because, as you know, lawsuits can name anybody they want for any particular reason. What we have is we have developed over the last 3 years a model of delivery for special ed, which gives us the best opportunity to provide the best program for kids while providing data and defensibility of that program should there be an attack. We would continue to use that as our primary model in these offerings, with the expectation that should we have an attack, we will have tremendous amount of data that's absolutely correct and absolutely defensible, no matter whose kid it is.
May I say two
things?
If you look at Appendix 2, you will see that we are currently serving or providing 4 regional classrooms. Those are the classes for the emotionally disturbed. That would be an example of exactly what we may do for small districts if we are providing a severely handicapped class for our own students. Cayucas or Cambria may refer to us for a severely handicapped student. We are already doing that with the emotionally disturbed population. Second thing I'd like to say is that...
Yeah, Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I can share that when there have been... litigations involving county services of district children, that the lion's share of the litigation, and I mean the extraordinarily lion's share of the litigation, has fallen upon the district of residence. I think that's more closely the fact of life than a shared litigation exposure.
Ms. Rogers?
This is just my last question. I think I'm remembering that this whole discussion sort of came about because we were talking, we were contemplating providing our own autism services.
That came out of these discussions, but I believe the 602 funding model started first about 5 years ago, 3 years ago.
Okay, so in our recent discussions, we talked about autism services, and are those included in the 5 that you've preliminarily withdrawn from the county office?
No, we have already withdrawn from those services as of this school year.
Autism is not a separate class. It's a service that's provided to children within regular classes, and we have taken back responsibility in district classes, not in county classes, but in district classes, to provide those services rather than seek outside county support for services in our classes.
If I could piggyback on that really quick, and it'll illustrate what we've talked about in the past, one of the aspects of the inefficiencies was our desire to offer autism services within our own classroom, yet we were still being charged by the county for employees we were no longer making use of. So we were required to pay this fee even though we were employing our own people to serve our own kids. That was one of the inefficiencies of the old model, that the county didn't have a choice. It wasn't that they were trying to overcharge us or anything. They had to provide a particular number of people to serve a particular number of kids, and all districts were in agreement from a long time ago that they would pay their fair share of that. Even though we weren't using it anymore, our fair share was calculated on the size of our district, and we had to pay a particular fee for that particular service, even though it wasn't there. That's one of the changes that we can get.
I had a
quick question about the autism thing, just real quick.
Certainly.
It may be sort of unclear, like, what are services for students with autism? And I think that pretty much it is. Sometimes there's a spectrum, and some students with autism really don't need any extra services except for being in a resource class or a special day class. But some might need speech therapy or occupational therapy, which we probably still use the county for, no?
Occupational therapy we vendor to the county. Speech services we provide ourselves.
In the district. But you're talking about some need more support with a paraeducator.
Correct. Autism is a spectrum, a wide spectrum, but all disabilities have a spectrum, and that's why we have that IEP. But yes, autism is very much of a spectrum.
I just had a procedural question for Dr. Valentine. I note that we have three board meetings before the October 15th date. And had there been any discussion about how this would be presented over those three board meetings all at one time in segments? So noting by the number of questions tonight, it could be more manageable. Has there been any thought?
That's what we'll take out of this meeting, is to go back and schedule the remaining presentation so that the board has enough information to make a decision by the first meeting in October. We didn't have a specific game plan coming in for those meetings until after today.
Does the board have any sense that you want this in certain segments or all at one time so you can discuss this, or is there any feeling one way or the other?
I guess I'm content to let the president and clerk work it out with the superintendent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Jackie. Any other questions or comments about this?
You can rest assured we'll bring you that information that seems most important to your understanding of this, and then we can distill down from that over the three meetings and provide you with all the information. I think we'll be able to be very successful in answering your questions in the next three meetings.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for everything. And if there are no further questions, do we have a
second?
We have a motion and a second to adjourn tonight's meeting. Any nays? We're out of here.